Eddie Vegan Burritos, 1 for 5, 3 for 10. Welcome to a very special episode of Binge Talking here. That's actually live in studio. I'm joined by Glenn Schloss, who's got a lot of things going on. He's got a drum circle in Nyack, New York, called Drink and Drum. He's got an audio effects company called Flavor Lab. He's friends with our producer, Matt. He's a natural-born storyteller on all sorts of platforms, works on a number of different levels. Without further ado, here's Glenn Schloss.
From New York City, USA, welcome to the Fox 5 Podcast Network.
Wow, that's an intro. Well done, man.
Good to be here, Steve.
Yeah, Matt's been talking about you for a while.
Yeah.
So we're excited to finally have you in here. So
awesome.
Let's start with the Drink and Drum thing. So you live in Nyack, New York,
which is
Hudson River on the west side of the river,
yep.
The other side of the river. And you invite people in. You are a talented percussionist, although I know anyone with talent never would refer to themselves as thus. So I'll just say it for you.
Then you
invite people of all different levels. There's people who've never picked up a drum in their life, and you just sort of get together and create this sound, you know, weekly sessions. Or
absolutely.
Whatnot. Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually a monthly circle.
Monthly,
so it's the second Friday every month at Casa del Sol, this funky Mexican restaurant on Main Street in the middle of beautiful Nyack.
Yeah.
And you summed it up perfectly. It's all ranges of ages, sizes, ethnicities. It's a melting pot, and the commonality is rhythm. The rhythm is the connector for all things when we get there. And there's no barriers. Everybody's playing. Everybody's grooving together.
Yeah.
And it's my job to whip it up, and then to step back and watch the magic just happen.
And you know how many people, like, I feel like even that, I am obsessed with music. I love music. But if I stumbled upon this, I know my gut reaction would be, oh, no, I have no rhythm. I would only screw this up. You guys have fun. You must encounter that a lot, I'd imagine.
I do. And that's one of the greatest things when somebody says that to me. I'm intimidated. I have no rhythm. I can't do this. I love when people say that, because I think the drum circle is the conduit to anybody that has never played drums officially before. My mantra is, everyone's a drummer. Everyone has rhythm. Everyone has a heartbeat. You know, we come out of our mama's womb beating. And so, you know, one of my missions in life is to embrace. I tell stories with rhythm. And it has nothing to do with skill set or skill level. And when somebody comes up to me after the drum circle and says, you know what, I've never done that before and I've never felt freer in my life. And you know, like, there's no ego at all. I usually say at the beginning of the circle, please, like, the only rule is just check your ego at the door. There's no such thing as advanced, intermediate, you know, beginner level. It's all about heart. It's all about passion. People come in with drums. People come in just clapping their hands. And again, it's my job to just make people feel comfortable and to get into that wave. And that wave, Steve, is so powerful that you really don't have to be, quote unquote, a professional drummer by any stretch.
It's sort of like a testament to how much stuff how many limitations we place on ourselves as we get older and older and older, and we get further away from where we started, which, as you mentioned, is with the beat of the heart, and we just get further away from it. So it's about getting closer to that.
Completely.
And I've seen, you know, some of the videos. So through there, you'd meet different people, and then you sort of document their daily existences too. You've got all these YouTube videos.
Yeah, you know, we've been doing it for a couple of years now, the circle itself. And I recognized how fascinating some of these characters were that were coming to my circle. You know, I didn't know them on a personal level, but they would show up every month. And so my wife Elena had the idea, and she said, honey, why don't we document some of these people? They're really special, and we don't really know a lot about them. So she started, I have to give my wife props, Elena created this series called The Drink and Drum Story. And she started documenting and doing like 4 to 5 minute vignettes, and they started getting wildly popular, you know, online. And people were like, what is this drum circle? What is this community that comes together? And it makes me feel so good, because it just amplifies how awesome Nyack is. Most of the people are from Nyack in the stories. So that's fun. And it's also fun when we're drumming, and then, like, I see folks talking and gathering, and they're like, I caught your video last week, and I'm amazed. Like, I didn't know anything about you, and I'm amazed that you're this teacher, and you help all these kids.
Yeah.
And so it's just bringing people together, and it's just a really positive. It's been wonderful. The feedback's been great.
It feels like there's this weird thing going on now where everyone realizes social media is terrible, and like probably doing more harm than good at this point. We're all leading these fake, separate lives that we're blasting to each other that only makes us feel worse about each other. So this seems like sort of an antidote to that, in a sense, like real connection in real life over a real skill. You know what I mean? This persona we put on, it seems like people are searching for something more meaningful than that.
I think, yeah, I couldn't agree more. And this drumming community, you know, I set up this 4 vibration drumming community online, and it's exactly what you said. It's just, it's about people digging rhythm and digging each other. And it fosters a lot of positivity. At the end of the day, I think that that's the kind of person I am.
Yeah.
So it's great to just have this platform and allow other people to jump on. And it's wild, man. Like, I've got drumming groups from, I got tribes from Connecticut coming down every week now, every month. I got people from New Jersey, from, up the Palisades. They're coming down and they're meeting me and they're shaking my hand. And they're like, dude, I'm catching some of these videos online. And, you know, people calling the club asking when the gig is happening, and it's exciting. Mm-hmm. It's all happening, and it's coming from a very pure place. So right. I appreciate what you're saying.
So you were, how long have you, did you have like a drum set as a kid?
Oh, of course.
Did you? Of course. That means you had cool parents. That, to me, that's a barometer. Anyone I meet who had a drum set as a kid, I'm like, you had tolerant, cool parents, because that's hell on earth for parents in a lot of ways, don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I had the two best parents in the world, and I appreciate bringing them up for a quick sec. Ellen and Artie Schloss, two of the greatest on this planet. I am the luckiest boy to have them as mom and dad, totally nurturing me from birth to express myself, just full of positivity. And I was really into sports when I was younger, but I'm one of four kids. I'm the youngest of four kids, and my brother really spoon-fed me all the good stuff musically. You know, like, my vocabulary grew pretty quickly. So everything from Iron Maiden to Hendrix to John Coltrane to Earth, Wind, and Fire to Steely Dan, Miles Davis. I was listening to everything, you know.
Hard rock and yacht rock.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. I just heard about that yacht rock thing recently.
Listening to it all day. It's the best. Yeah. There's a serious channel with that. It's weird. You know, I was actually looking at the river listening to yacht rock. I've had this conversation with a lot of people, because in the fish world, yacht rock's like a big subculture, which we can get into too. It's weird though, because it seems carefree on the surface, but it has like a really depressing undertone. I don't even know if I can fully articulate it. It's weird. There's some sort of vibe to it that like feels specifically 70s. I've got to work on that theory, but there's something there to flesh out eventually. We'll continue that thought later.
Yeah, I'd like to hear more about that.
Yeah, yeah, rock. So, right, Big Brothers are huge, because I'm an only child. So, like, I don't know. I think it's cool when you have other older people who have your back, sort of shepherding you through, you know, this is cool, check this out.
Absolutely. And I think at the time, you don't realize it, you know, when you're younger and you're just kind of going through the motions. And then you get to that age where you look back and you go, wow, like, Danny was responsible for all of my music vocabulary. I had some skills I could play, but Battle of the Bands, that kind of stuff that would come around, it was just like, you know, watching my brother play with his band and play like Crazy Train, and I must have been 7-8 years old.
Yep.
I'll never forget those experiences, going to Danny Sternback's basement down the block, and he was the drummer in the band, and you know, I would sit there like a wallflower, completely overwhelmed and intimidated by what these guys were putting out. They were doing like 2112, Rush, Overture type stuff. And I thought just everybody did that and grew up that way.
Yeah.
And then I didn't realize until later on, wow, this just, it gave me the tools.
No, totally right. I viewed that from the opposite way. I had a neighbor who had a drum set. His older brother had a band. I'd go down and watch them rehearse. It was as loud as it could be in this tiny basement. Like, I could hear him drumming from our house. And I'll never forget the time he was just a madman. He was really good. He was a year older than me, and he learned Shy Boy by David Lee Roth. You know, that double
shy
bass.
Boy, shy Boy,
it's like the most double
love
bass.
It. I love it. Greg Bissonette.
Yeah,
Greg Bissonette,
which is amazing.
Drums.
The David Lee Roth band is incredible.
Badass.
Those, first couple albums. Yeah, it's unbelievable. But like, I couldn't believe someone could even do that. You know, that's what I was thinking about this the other day. I really wish YouTube had been around when I was a kid, because I'm coming at this from an opposite perspective of, like, I would pick up a guitar, and obviously you're not going to make a sound that makes sense the first time you pick it up. And there was no way to figure out really how to get to that place. Lessons were this silly thing where I'd have to go to the town over. We learned something you didn't care about. Like, if I could have just plopped in front of a TV and be like, this is Welcome to the Jungle, and it's not that hard.
Yeah, yeah.
That would have changed my life, you know, in a way that it just felt impossible to me. If you didn't have a brother who played, didn't have someone to show you riffs, it was just like, that's something, you know, aliens from outer space do, and I can't do that.
No, I appreciate what you're saying. I think the accessibility of being able to teach yourself these days is insane.
Mm-hmm.
What you could do. I mean, I still go online now. Like, traditionally, I'm not a guitar player, you know. But to your point, Steve, like, I've taken a few lessons on YouTube, and I'm learning, I'm shredding riffs just purely based on, like, the screen and listening to the, you know, Marty Schwartz
they can
talk
slow
about
down the angle. It's the incredible. GoPro strapped to the
it's
neck.
It's incredible, man. Yeah. If you have passion and you have a desire, you will learn anything you want to learn.
Yeah.
I'm convinced.
Yeah. It's really powerful. That is the yin and yang of the whole social media
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. Like, that's the good end.
There's good and bad. That's the best end, too. I mean, that's Photoshop. That's all this Adobe. Anything. Right. You can see someone showing you.
Yeah.
In your home.
Yeah. It's so powerful. And now, you know, it's interesting. In my business, in my other life, the idea of being able to record at home and people paying you for tracks just out of your home studio is very exciting.
Yeah.
You know?
So you run Flavor Lab, which is an audio effects studio.
Absolutely. Well, that's part of it. Yeah. Yeah. It's an audio post-production facility. We're on 23rd Street and Park in beautiful New York City in the Flatiron.
Mm-hmm. That's the best part of the city. I love it down there.
Yeah. It's all the restaurants are amazing. Yep. The Madison Square Park is across the street.
Yep.
So you can go hang out there. I could bring my djembe.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
But so I am a co-founder with two other partners. Eric Blicker and Brian Quill are my two awesome partners in this crazy adventure called Flavor Lab. And we have been doing it since 97, man. Mm. I got a lucky break at VH1 right after college. I got an opportunity to write some music, a theme song for one of the very first Top 100 shows with Kevin Bacon, the Top 100 Greatest Artists of Rock and Roll. I don't know if you remember that one.
That was right. That was the beginning of, like, the countdown video.
Yes,
yeah.
That was the very first one.
And start, that was the start of, like, retro, too. That was the beginning. Like, that time frame was the beginning of, what's that famous, Behind the Music. And that there was that whole thirst for retro started then, and cable TV sort of filled that void. Yeah.
I guess it was sort of right place, right time for me.
Yeah.
You know, I had a relationship, and I was able to shake somebody's hand at VH1. And ironically, I met Eric, Eric Blicker. I met him about a week prior to getting the opportunity in a revolving wedding band gig in the city. We played, like, Earth, when it was like a Motown review band, and Eric and I were the rhythm section in the back. And we fell in love, man, just locking a groove. Mm-hmm. And we were like, this feels really good. And it was really looking back now, it was the Wild West of what was to become, like, with music licensing and creating, you know, studio and audio content. It's amazing how far we've come in 20 years just as an industry. But at the time, people were still hiring composers to do a lot of show packaging for promos. Not necessarily. Now everybody uses, you know, library tracks.
Yeah.
But back in the day, they were very, very into hiring composers to do promo campaigns. So, you know, I met Eric on this gig, got that lucky break. Right before I walked into the building, I called Eric the night before and said, hey, man, I'm a little nervous about this because I don't have a reel to give them. You seem like a cool guy. Do you want to pretend that we're a company? And I'll go in there and I'll tell them this, that, and the other. He's like, sure, you seem like a pretty cool guy too.
Yeah.
So I got in there and had this meeting. Now I'm going to date myself. I came in with a half-inch cassette tape. They put it in the cassette player. They take it out. There's this sort of awkward pause. I'm like, ready to leave the building and jump out the window. And she's like, the graphic designer looks at me and says, we love it. We love your reel and we want to hire you to do all the music. I was like, I kind of looked behind me. I had that movie moment.
Yeah.
Are you talking to me?
Right.
Oh my goodness. So I walked out. I called Eric. I said, dude, we got a company.
Hit a payphone.
We're going to do this. Yeah.
You're right. No cell phones. I know. I can tell exactly how old you are and it's exactly how old I am.
Right on, brother.
Yeah.
And the rest, as they say, is history. 20 years, we're still partners in this business.
That's wild.
Brian Quill came on board around 2004. Mm-hmm. We rebranded the company and became Flavor Lab in early 2000s and haven't looked back since.
The licensing stuff is wild. It's like really, it's really challenging. Like I'm putting together a music special and all the different rules for video, for audio, web, TV, da-da-da. It's wild. Like having a head start on that, I bet, is just beneficial in general, knowing what you can do, what you can't do.
Absolutely.
It's because it's wild out there.
On one hand, if you don't know anything about it, it's incredibly overwhelming and intimidating and complicated to figure out rights and stuff. On the other hand, it's actually pretty straightforward as far as, like, you know, what do you want to do with the music? Where do you want it to live? And then, you know, there are rates for all that stuff. And it can be a lot more simplified than what people
like
think.
You just listed out, right? This is web only. This is national. Yeah. This is private. This is a small thing.
Exactly.
You get to keep this. Right. Even Adobe and all that stuff is fascinating. So I know Matt said you are a Phish fan. Is that true?
You know, I probably don't go nearly as deep as you do. I heard that you're an incredible Phish fan. So
I don't have much going on in my outside life, so I've got plenty of spare time.
I can tell you, I have to introduce you to a dear friend of mine, Eric DiPicciotto. If he's listening, EDP, he's got a band up in Maplewood, beautiful Maplewood, New Jersey.
Oh, yeah, called, Maple. I know it's like a big bohemian place. About
he's starting a big, yeah. He's starting a fish tribute band up there.
Oh, yeah?
Called something stew, fish stew or something.
Fish market stew.
Fish market stew.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, that's a lyric, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how deep I go.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, I've seen them a bunch of times at the Garden. You know, it's the thing that fascinates me, Steve, is like, it doesn't matter if they're playing in front of 20,000 people. You feel like they're playing to you, and you feel like they're in your living room.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard to do at the Garden.
Yeah, everyone's locked in. Like, I like it here because it's like every game is, you know, game 7 of the World Series when they're at MSG. You know, like, you know it. That's what I love about New York, too, actually. It's like, I just saw Dead & Co. this Saturday, and it's like, you know they care more when they play here. It's just a fact. And, like, growing up somewhere else, I used to resent that. Why doesn't Phish play Boston more? You know, that's a special place. They had a special gig here in 1989. It's like, they don't really care that much. You know, it's like they just care about New York because they can live here, be rich, and then limo down to the gig and then leave. And that's why, like, I was talking to someone this weekend about, like, there's this great Dennis McNally interview on the Grateful Dead channel. And everyone wants to pretend like their home venue is the most important venue to the band.
Sure, of course.
And if someone called him from Maine, he's like, oh, I saw him in Oxford, Maine, 1986. Did the guys like play in Maine? And the guy's just like, you know what, man? I got to be honest with you. They played three places. Home, which was San Francisco. New York, which was, you know, undeniable. And then the road, which was everywhere else. And I thought that was, like, the greatest answer. Because it's so true. There's no special connection. They don't give a shit. Except if they're in New York, you know?
Yeah.
Which I love. When you live in New York, it's the greatest.
Absolutely.
I get the resentment that generates elsewhere. But it's the greatest when you live here. Because they do just care more. And that's totally transparent enough, you know?
There's so much mystique about New York, you know, for so many obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, MSG is on my bucket list. You know, that's the dream gig, to have 20,000 people with djembes walk in and sort of have this massive musical melodic drum circle, you know, vibrating, you know, blowing the roof off of MSG. That's the dream, baby. That's it.
Right. It's crazy when you walk around, like, you see the backstage, and, like, that's the same backstage from Song Remains the Same. That's where Jimmy Page was walking around. You know, it's the same thing. It's crazy. It's real wild being, you know, seeing that all. It's that building, right? Everyone who grew up as a fan can't help but care about that.
Totally.
Yeah. So let's do some, like, music here, because I know you were playing around before I got here, and I was like, is that sampled? It wasn't sampled. Give us an idea of just, like, where this takes you. This is just off the cuff. This is just you playing right now.
Yeah. You're going to put me on the spot.
Yeah. Yep. It's my podcast.
Awesome. So, I brought a couple of toys in here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have laptops and screens and projectors and all sorts of crazy stuff, and obviously couldn't bring all that stuff down.
Yep.
So I dusted off the looper pedal that I really, admittedly, Steve, have not used in a very, very long time. So we'll give it a shot. I'm going to try something, and we'll see what happens.
All right.
This will either work or not. I got my happy drum here, too, which is really cool. Awesome. Okay. So, see, I'm gonna riff on a tune that I wrote about my honeymoon.
Perfect. Okay. No rights issues. This is great. Do an original. We don't need to get sued by EMI. Oh,
we'll talk about licensing
Geffen.
Later.
Yeah. Uh-oh, Matt. This is a backdoor lawsuit.
This might just be shared with us.
Get ready for the money grab. So this Dear is, Fox, $2,000.
There you
original
go.
Original tune.
So this is my happy drum. It makes me happy.
Sounds like a rainforest. It's a tiny thing. It's like half the size of a volleyball, but it gives off a very unique sound. Yeah. That's cool.
So this is called Sevilla, and I'll just a very, very quick backstory. My wife is from Spain originally. Mm-hmm. She took me there for our honeymoon. We had a beautiful, beautiful trip. I met lots of family and friends. And then we rented a car. I put the wrong gas in the car.
Okay.
Because they use a different kind of gas over there. I guess it was diesel. Diesel we didn't know would make the car go. Just an Americano with the wrong type of gas in the car. We were never going far. Help me now. That's one of the lyrics.
Yeah.
Anyway, but so that's what happened. We got lost in this crazy town going to Sevilla. And I thought, we're not going to get out of here. We're not going to make it out of here alive. It was a really kind of sketchy town.
Wow.
So we got out. I got this song. And it's a fun little jam mm-hmm. about my adventure in Spain.
Surviving your honeymoon.
Yeah. That, yes. 13 years later, still surviving.
Yep.
All right. Let's see what we can do. Was at 1 o'clock, but we can't stop from the north to the south, driving down with the top down. The fire's on my mind, I'm running out of time, making it down to the tip. On a Spanish trip, I'm stranded in Merida. Elena, Elena, are you the man? Stranded in Merida. I'm stranded in Merida. Elena, Elena, are you the man? Stranded in Merida. Oh! Heading into the Pueblo, we didn't know we were cooking, we were looking real good. Stopping for gas, stopping was our last chance with the wind at our backs. You see, diesel, we didn't know, would make the car go, just an Americano with the wrong type of gas in the car, we were never going far. Well, help us now! I'm stranded in Merida. Elena, Elena, are you the man? Stranded in Merida. Stranded in Merida. Elena, Elena, are you the man? Stranded in Merida. Oh, oh, move on up, move on up. Move on up, move on up, yeah. Move on up. Move on up, yeah. Woo! Oh, yeah. Move on up, move on up. Move on up, move on up, yeah. Move on up, move on up. Move on up, move on up, yeah. Oh, 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 oh.
Wild. That's an amazing journey for one person to take us on with an effects pedal and like what four instruments there. That's amazing.
Thank you, brother.
You're like that. You get into that right and then you come out of that. Like right now you're sort of like moving out of a zone, right? Like you just totally inhabit that. Yeah. You weren't noticing us taking photos and you're in that moment.
Not really. Yeah.
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 That's incredible.
You got to go there. It's just like you're either in it or you're...
Sound is so powerful. That's incredible.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, brother. Feels really good, man. I've been here. I feel real comfortable and playing for you guys. And
we're glad we had you here before Matt got kicked out of this old executive corner office. He's going to be back in his boring little space in like a few months, unless Matt puts up a fight. No, this is great. You know, just before we go, it's like it is. You know, it's funny when Matt and I collaborate on stuff here. Sound is so important. How hard is it to get executives to realize how important sound is? Because when we do stuff, it's like we go through those stock clips? I'm like, Matt, get me some Guns N' Roses type music. I mean, it's rubbish. It's terrible. You know, like if you cheap out on that, you really short sell the project, you know, I think.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. And it can be tough.
Yeah.
But when you meet certain people that are just all about the music, and you know immediately, you know, we've been doing it for a long time, when projects are just, they're evolving and they're coming about and the creative director says, I want to get the music guys in immediately. I want to talk about the direction. Those are the kinds of folks that we want to work with, you know, and we've been blessed to work with a lot of those people. I think that's why I'm still here doing it.
Yep.
You know, so there, I still have faith and hope that there are people that feel that audio is 51% of the project.
Right, basis of it, not something you tack on after it's over.
Yeah, I think catalogs have made it challenging. And as I say that, I have a catalog. But there are people that want an original voice and a sonic brand and you know, and that just dig audio. And you feel it and you hear it when you see something that's mediocre and something that totally kicks ass. Mm-hmm. You can feel the difference. And it's generally because the audio is smoking, you know? It's funny that I've heard about these crazy studies where they say, you know, viewers watching TV are more inclined to change the channel because of the audio not sounding right as opposed to the video. You know what I mean? Like, so it's just so important that you get the audio right.
Right. It's backwards, our perception of it. You think the audio is the wallpaper, but it's not.
Right.
Right. When the volume shoots up on a commercial, you immediately shut it off.
You feel it.
What's crazy? I still think of the thing I do hate about it though is like, whenever I hear signed, sealed, delivered, I still think of the Toyota sales event or the Ford, whatever. Like, there are certain songs that have been so imprinted into car commercials to me now that I don't like it. But one exception is, have you heard the Lemmy doing Sympathy for the Devil one, which is brand new?
It's a new ad.
And it's like, oh, this is the first one of those I like because, I don't know, it's like Lemmy from the dead and he's already gone, so whatever. He's not selling out and it's cool. You know?
I don't even know
what it's advertising, truthfully, but I think it's like a Dodge commercial. Isn't that weird, though?
Man,
it's like,
I had the same experience with that, was it Mercedes or Buick or with the Zeppelin, man, with rock and roll. Remember they were doing that and the car's jamming down.
They tried to make Chrysler cool with that. Cadillac. It was Cadillac.
Yes.
Cadillac.
But the same feeling, like, I can't believe they're using the Zeppelin track.
I know.
You know?
Yeah.
That's timeless.
It's like sacred, but someone just owns it and can sell it. Exactly. They sold their whole catalog in 1980 or something. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Peter Grant sold
it. Oh, did he really? Interesting.
For $10 million in 1980, which was like $10 trillion back then.
Sure. I did not know that.
Yeah. So I get, you know, now it's just something that's commoditized.
Yeah.
To end on a down note.
No, you know what, man? We're going to end on an up note. I'm really, thank you so much for having me.
My
Steve.
Pleasure.
This is
Thanks
great.
For coming in.
This
yeah.
is really awesome. Matt and I just recently reconnected and said, you got to hang out with Steve and do this. So this was fantastic, man. And I have to get you to come up to come see us play sometime.
I will drag down your drum circle anytime you want. No, I'm going to feel it by the end of the time, though. I'm sure of it. Awesome.
I promise you, you will feel it.
You're a good guide. Glenn, I appreciate it.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks, man.
Pleasure.
Bitch talking Steve Lacy, yeah.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. This episode was recorded, edited, and mixed by Matt Onimus. Our executive producers are me, Matt, and Ahmad Asghar. Our vice president of news is Byron Harmon, and our vice president and general manager is Lou Leone. Binge Talking is part of the Fox 5 Podcast Network. I'm Steve Lacy, and if you have any questions or comments, feel free to hit me up on Twitter, at Stephen Lacy with a V, or on Instagram, Steve Lacy, S-T-E-V-E-L-A-C-Y. In the meantime, stay tuned for our next episode. Come on! That was incredible. I felt the George Michael thing come up there.